From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, a discussion about the ongoing attempts by the U.S. government to destabilize the government in Venezuela. We spoke Sunday with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo. Well, Tony, maybe we could start with this piece that you pointed out to me, challenging this other piece that Matt Taibbi wrote in Rolling Stone.
Yeah, and Joe Mansberger wrote a piece in Telesur English. It's not up on the site now, but so I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's been taken down because Rolling Stone got in touch with Telesur protesting or what might have happened, but it's not obviously on the site now, but the link is still live. So, and if you go to that link, you get the article. And essentially, Joe Emmersberger, who's written, I know Joe Emmersberger's writing mainly on Haiti, because I think he, after the coup against Aristide in 2004, he and Jeb Sprague and various other people, Kim Ives, wrote a lot about what's been going on in Haiti and very critical of the U.S. government. And recently, over the last couple of years, Germansberger has written a lot in defending the Bolivarian process in Venezuela. And not always uncritically, but I'm with kind of reasoned criticism of the process without calling into question the process itself. And he wrote a very good piece criticizing an article apparently in Rolling Stone by Matt Taibbi, who's supposed to be one of Rolling Stone's star reporters, as I understand it. And wasn't he the one that came up with this metaphor for Goldman Sachs, a giant squid stuck on the face of the world sucking its financial lifeblood, metaphor? Yeah. Anyway, and he came out with a ridiculous article attacking the Venezuelan government and supporting the Venezuelan opposition, and plugging all the main talking points that the Venezuelan opposition have falsely tried to project as the reality in Venezuela, when the reality is the exact opposite of what they say.
One example, just in the caption on this article, it says the vampire squid, that's the Goldman Sachs, rescues an infamous autocrat. That's how they refer to elected president Maduro.
Yeah, and what they're trying, what that's a reference to, is that the Venezuelan government issued some bonds that were bought by Goldman Sachs, one of the false lines of attack against the Venezuelan government that you read in websites like Zero Hedge and other quite popular supposedly alt websites is that Venezuela's on the verge of collapse because it can't pay its bonds, and the PDVSA, the state oil company, is on the verge of bankruptcy. And in fact, what that is just contributing to the U.S. government's attempts to destabilize the Venezuelan economy.
Right.
Because the Venezuelan government has regularly met all its bond payments, and PDVSA is very far from being on the verge of bankruptcy, and it's received huge investment from both its Russian industry partners and its Chinese industry partners. So it's ridiculous to say that a country that has the biggest oil reserves in the world, in the Orinoco Basin, is on the verge of bankruptcy. It's just absurd. And Matt Taibbi's contributing to that with his ridiculous article.
Which is an interesting, that's an interesting contradiction all by itself, because he has acquired, rightfully or wrongfully, these credentials as an opponent of Goldman Sachs, an enemy of Goldman Sachs, etc. But what he's doing actually here is, it looks like playing footsie, hand to glove dance with Goldman Sachs, with Venezuela being squeezed in the middle.
Right, and it's just classic. And Nemesberger points out various contradictions. I mean, Matt Taibbi talks about the dictatorship in Venezuela, which is downright absurd. I mean, Venezuela is the most democratic country in the world.
Yep.
It has the most democratic constitution in the world, far more democratic than the U.S. Constitution. And if the Venezuelan opposition have failed to take power, it's because they don't have majority support in Venezuela.
Right.
And you can see that in polls from polling companies that are regarded as independent, like the Hinterlaces polling company, that reports from its polls that 80% of people are against the Venezuela's violent attempts to overthrow the government. And the majority of people support the government's efforts to resolve the crisis in Venezuela via the Constituent Assembly. To correct the elements in the Bolivarian constitution of 1999? I've forgotten when the constitution came into effect.
Back a ways.
Enable the Venezuelan opposition to, and there are loopholes in the constitution that enable the Venezuelan opposition to exploit those institutional weaknesses. And the idea of the Constituent Assembly is to give ordinary people in Venezuela a chance to have their say about how they'd like the country to be better organized in terms of its institutional relationships and the relationship of government to popular power. And whereas the Venezuelan opposition are doing everything they can to destabilize Venezuela's institutions, and doing so in an extremely violent way that is straight out of what the United States and the other NATO country governments have done around the world in, for example, Libya or Syria, where they fomented minority opposition organizations' attacks on the institutional stability of their respective countries. They're doing the same in Venezuela now. And Matt Taibbi's article is a classic example of the way the neo-colonial progressive managerial class in the United States and Western Europe, Canada as well, contribute to NATO country campaigns against governments that resist the strategic agenda of the United States and its allies.
Yeah. You know,
so I strongly recommend people to read that Emmersberger piece if they can find the link.
Yeah, and if they go to my Facebook page, it's Don DeBar, DONDEBAR, there's a direct link to it. I just posted it. You know, I'm looking at the Taibbi article and at the close of it. Talking about Capriles, Enrique Capriles, the opposition governor of the state of Miranda, told reporters that he and his team were beaten by security forces in a march this past weekend. And then he's talking about how Goldman Sachs investment, you know, buying Venezuelan bonds, basically, would only make matters worse, as reported by the way, the Miami Herald.
So, well, yeah, so there's Matt Taibbi puffing an opposition Venezuelan politician who's up to his eyes in the corruption and scandal of Odebrecht.
Yeah, I mean, and a fascist, by the way.
It's just so absurd, and a demonstration of how individuals like Taibbi, who are supposed to be renowned for their due diligence, and when it suits them, don't. They don't do due diligence. They don't research correctly. Henry Capriles is an individual who's up to his eyes in corruption allegations and is deeply implicated in the regional Odebrecht scandal.
He's a crook. You know? And by the way, with all these folks like Taibbi and everyone else looking at Trump and his white working class supporters, as they put it, as fascists, Capriles is an actual fascist, this guy. His politics are fascist. No arguing that.
Yeah, and he has openly organized and funded violent street protests in throughout Venezuela, but particularly in the state of Miranda that he's the governor. which I'm part of, which it covers the urban area of Greater Caracas. So, you know, and he's Capriles is somebody who is, and he and Leopoldo Lopez, who's in jail where Capriles should be, were people who participated in the 2002 coup, and they attacked the Cuban embassy at that time. Capriles right. was part of the mob that attacked the Cuban embassy. Now, these are the people that Matt Taibbi is supporting. Yeah. These are the people that have that they encourage their supporters to attack the police using lethal force, lethal weapons, and these are the people that have set on fire people that they've identified as supporters of the government.
Right.
And one of those supporters died today as a result of an attack by the people that Taibbi's supporting.
In other words,
thank you very much, Matt Taibbi.
Yeah, he was murdered. The supporter was murdered by the people that Matt Taibbi is supporting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Rolling Stone magazine, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't expect anything from the progressive media in the United States. It's like Democracy Now supporting the terrorists in Syria.
Yeah. Yeah. Yesterday, yeah. I was at the Left Forum in New York. There were at least two symposia that I saw that essentially would instruct people on how to support the democratic opposition that's fighting both the Assad regime and the ISIS whatever maniacs. Yeah, they had that at the Left Forum, basically yeah. aligning with imperialism in foreign policy.
Yes, progressive people anywhere should be supporting the Venezuelan government's efforts to promote dialogue and resolve the crisis in Venezuela peacefully. And anybody who supports the Venezuelan opposition is actually supporting the NATO country strategy to destroy Venezuela as a country and sink it into the chaos that we can see right now in Syria.
Well, look, I would say Libya is a perfect thing to invoke, Syria for regionally also, but let's look at Africa and Libya, because essentially the United States, President Obama, Hillary Clinton, and the whole apparatus there, decapitated Africa, independent rising Africa, by taking out Libya, which was financing and intended to finance African political, social, and economic integration. When they took out Libya and destroyed it as a country and stole the revenue generators that were going to fund this project, they implemented at the same time AFRICOM, the United States African Command, across the military command and control of 35 of Africa's countries. Just by taking out Libya, that happened within a year. Now, Venezuela, the role that it's played in the regional integration project and protecting the sovereignty of the 600 million people in Latin America and the Caribbean, et cetera, it's the prize, right?
Yeah, and at the moment, the Venezuelan opposition are losing. And the United States policy there is failing because the Venezuelan opposition don't enjoy majority support, and the government has more support in Venezuela than the violent Venezuelan opposition do. They may not have majority support; their support probably runs at around 35%, something like that. But among the don't knows, it's very clear from the opinion polls that are appearing, like the Hinterlaters one that I mentioned earlier, that the don't knows and the independents sympathize more with the government than they do with the Venezuelan opposition. Right. And that means that the Constituent Assembly is likely to be successful, and that will be the death knell for the current Venezuelan opposition attempt to mount a coup in Venezuela.
So let's say the other side. Let's say the other side's sees it that way. The real other side, the strategists and Langley or the Pentagon or whatever hole that they hide in. Yeah, Brussels, whatever hole or holes they're hiding in. That they see it the way you just described it, and so they're saying, okay, well, we're looking pretty much at the fullest expression of public discord within the country that we can have. Maybe we'll throw some paramilitaries at them out of Colombia and what you call it on the other side, you know, whatever. Maybe we've got a few more tricks we can throw at them, but let's say this is about as much discord as we can create. You've had the effort at the OAS, you know, it keeps getting called up to try to authorize intervention.
Sorry, Duncan. Yeah, they failed again last week, by the way.
Yes. But you know, so let's say they look outside the OAS or just decide finally, you know, the hell with all these forms, you know, send in the Marines or whatever. I mean, this moment may be coming. It's going to depend a lot, I think, on what choices are made, you know, I don't know, by Trump or whoever is going to end up making the decisions about what the policy is going to be towards Venezuela. Because what we're looking at is the fullest expression of the policy that was. I mean, this was created during Bush. You know, since 1998, this is the policy.
Yeah, and Obama. Had. I know yeah. Obama's Obama, very responsible.
Yeah. Obama's executive order is the one that, you know, Venezuela is a threat to national security of the United States. Yeah, that was Obama. Yeah.
And absurd.
You, yeah. So let's say that this is the fullest expression of that thus far. So Trump may have a different policy, but assuming it's going to continue on the same course, foreign intervention. I mean, what happens to Venezuela if they start turning the screws from the outside?
Well, I think it's extremely unlikely that even a Trump administration would be foolish enough to cave in to the recommendations of its southern command, you know, the U.S., which is effectively an independent fiefdom,
right,
down there in Florida. I'm the right. Southern Command, and runs policy on its own, independent of the State Department. You
right.
know?
Right.
And they have a lot of input into what the U.S. authorities eventually end up formally doing officially. But even the SASCOM down there in Florida will have to think twice before they if they are thinking in terms of a military intervention. It's far more likely that what they'll try and do is to intensify the Venezuelan opposition's campaign by means of Colombian paramilitaries.
Right. That's what I was suggesting,
and which is essentially what happened in both Libya and in Syria. And the U.S. uses proxy forces that they support with very small numbers of their own special forces. And that's likely, if there is some kind of intervention, that's likely to be the model in Venezuela. It's extremely unlikely that you're going to see U.S. Ships, naval ships, firing cruise missiles into Venezuela. I mean, that's just kind of out of the question, at least for the moment.
I'm thinking of Pigs or something,
That is why Nicolas Maduro and his team, including Diosdado Cabello, who's kind of he is the hardliner in the Venezuelan government. But that's why Nicolas Maduro and Diosdado Cabello and their colleagues, Elias Howe and Adelcy Rodriguez, who's done a fantastic job as Venezuela's foreign minister. That's why they've taken the decision to follow a peace process, to develop a peace process, because any other option would give the nutcases in the U.S. Southern Command, you know, these fascists in the U.S. Southern Command who've protected Cuban anti-Castro terrorists for decades. You know, any other policy option developed by the Venezuelan government that would involve anything but a peace process would open the door for that kind of military intervention that you've tried, that you mentioned. And that's why the Venezuelan opposition are so desperate, because they can see that the Constituent Assembly is going to give the government absolutely unquestionable majority support for a peaceful resolution of the Venezuelan crisis that's going to leave the Venezuelan opposition, including the opposition in Venezuela's National Assembly, without any options. They're going to be defeated. And what's going to happen in the governmental elections and the regional elections at the end of this year is likely to confirm that President Maduro has majority support across the country, and the Venezuelan opposition don't. Their moment passed. They had about 6 to 9 months after they won the National Assembly elections in 2015 to complete a coup against Nicolas Maduro, and they failed. And that's why they're out in the streets fomenting violence now, because they're desperate.
Yeah, they missed their moment, in other words.
So, yeah, and I'm talking about Colombia, and Delcy Rodriguez has gone on the offensive in the OAS, and she's likely to raise the issue of events in Colombia. And what mainstream media in North America and Western Europe don't report is, for example, that Colombia is wracked by a crisis in the Buenaventura area of Colombia, which and my geography of Colombia is terrible. There's been a civic strike for the last couple of weeks, in which the Colombian security forces, using much greater levels of repression than we've seen from the Venezuelan security forces, facing an incomparably greater threat. In Colombia, the security forces on the orders of the government have injured over 320 people participating in the civic strike. Where have you read about that in the Western media? Nowhere. They just don't cover it. And so, and also, for example, and I think we've mentioned this in the past in Colombia, over the just in this year, 2017, around 50 social activists and community activists have been murdered by either the government or paramilitary forces supported by the government. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the reality in Colombia. And it's we can look forward to Delcy Rodriguez making that very prominent in her interventions in the next meeting of the OAS, which, although Venezuela has decided to withdraw from the OAS, the process takes about 2 years. Right. And she is likely to take part in the next conference of foreign ministers in the OAS, in which she's likely to raise that whole issue of what's happening in Colombia and how the peace process is under threat because the Colombian government is not doing anything to address the phenomenon of increasing paramilitary activity, right-wing paramilitary activity, that is calling the peace, that is threatening the viability of the peace process.
Yeah.
And what she's also likely to do is to raise the issue of violence in Mexico, which is just out of control. And another leading community activist in the state of Guerrero was murdered just the other day. And the Mexican government has still done nothing to clarify the links between itself, its own functionaries, and the organized crime gangs responsible for the disappearance of 43 students in Ayotzinapa a couple of years ago.
And the role of the police and all of that. Yeah, you know what gets me, too? No call at the OAS for addressing that particular question, has there been? It's been, 2 years now?
Yeah, and General Secretary Luis Almagro was forced to make a comment on the events in Brazil, where there have been extensive demonstrations across the country against the corrupt usurper government of President Temer and his colleagues. And one of his advisors was arrested the other day on corruption charges, and he himself faces, and if he's ousted from office, it seems likely, He himself is likely to face corruption charges in relation to the Odebrecht scandal and the BDS meatpacking company corruption allegations, as well as the Petrobras allegations, none of which the Brazilian prosecutors or judicial system have been able to pin on either Lula da Silva or Dilma Rousseff.
Wasn't he in the Panama Papers too? Didn't Temer also appear in the Panama Papers? I think he was like everywhere. Yeah. He's everywhere.
And as well as Mauricio Macri, and all these right wing leaders, completely corrupt. And Luis Almagro, when he was challenged about Brazil, he came out with the lame comment that actually confirms the reality in Venezuela. He said, "Well, Brazil's institutional stability is Brazil's institutions are still very stable." That was his that was his response. and so, what is he saying implicitly there? Why he's saying that Venezuela's institutions aren't stable, but why not? Because the Venezuelan opposition has deliberately set out to destabilize the Venezuelan government and the other powers of state.
Along with the U.S. in violation of the OAS Charter, aside from the U.N. Charter a whole bunch of other...
And we can expect some fireworks in the OAS the next time its foreign ministers meet.
Yeah, good. Yeah, she's great. I think she does a good job representing her country.
Right. And Delcy Rodriguez is a star. And so then, and the other relevant things that have been happening over the last while have been those events that I referred to in Colombia. The Colombian government has been completely unable to follow through on its commitments to the peace process, and that at the moment the peace process isn't in crisis because why not? Because the FARC guerrilla are meeting their commitments under the terms of the peace agreement, but the government is not, and eventually that's going to lead to a crisis. And there's no sign at all that either the Colombian army or the Colombian security forces are doing anything to address their very questionable relationship with the right-wing Colombian paramilitaries, associated with, above all, the figure of the ex-president Álvaro Uribe. And everything points to the fact that they're colluding with the paramilitaries to take over the areas that previously had been protected from the worst effects of government repression and paramilitary repression by the FARC guerrilla.
Right.
And now that the FARC guerrilla fighters have shown that they're very serious about demobilizing, handing over their armaments to the United Nations supervisors, it's not clear how the looming crisis is going to be resolved, in particular because the Colombian Supreme Court undercut a key component of the Colombian peace process by making a ruling that will allow the Colombian National Assembly, the Colombian legislature, to modify very important parts of the peace agreement itself, including judicial arrangements, the amnesty for members of the FARC and people associated with the FARC living in exile, and a whole series of issues that will now be subject to legislative review by the Colombian National Assembly that previously had been protected under fast-track legislation, giving the government the ability to push through the provisions of the peace process, and now it can't do so.
And if it does, it can change it at will at a later date. We're going to pick it up there next time. I really appreciate your insight into all of this, because there's so many, just even in the immediate region between Venezuela and Colombia, and we didn't discuss Guyana, but there too, and the border and all that, a lot of moving parts. And so thank you very much, Tony. It's a pleasure to speak with you as always.
Yeah, I look forward to talking to you again, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.